Right. Yeah. If you can move the lectern, that'd be lovely, Paul. Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Morning. Interesting start today. Got to say, it's particularly warm in here, isn't it? I don't know why that is.
Beautiful.
Yes.
We're basking in it, aren't we, Rich? We're basking in it. Just want to go over this fundamental passage. All these talks I've done on creation, and some of you have suffered a good few by now. I always start with this, but it's so true, and it's so fundamental to what we believe. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and that's the first phrase in all the scripture, for all the books of the Bible. That's the first phrase. In the beginning, God created. And that's the challenge to the men and women of the Western world. And hopefully it no longer represents a great challenge to us. We believe it. But I hope that this talk this morning is going to strengthen us in our confidence that God is the creator. And when we come down Genesis chapter 1 and we go through the various days of creation, we come down to the fifth chapter, and then there's life brought to bear. A wonderful day is that, life. And God says, let the earth bring forth a living creature after his kind, cattle and creeping thing, beast of the earth after his kind, and it was so. And God made the beast of the earth after his kind, and cattle after their kind, and everything that creepeth upon the earth after his kind. And God saw that was good. And so we have abundance of life in all its various forms. And today I'm going to focus in on one creature, just one of all the millions of different life forms that there are. I just want us to have a look at it, hopefully gain some wonderment from it, and be encouraged that there is a mind greater than ours at work, a great creator, a designer who has everything in his hand. And I highlighted that in red because obviously I'm going to talk about an insect. A creeping thing, when we read the authorised version, usually refers to an insect, whether it stays upon the ground forever and a day or it actually takes to the air. And I've also underlined the fact that that creeping thing will reproduce after its kind. So where evolution talks about there being change, mutations, it may take millions of years for that to happen, but there's change. Bible says directly, the word of the Lord says clearly, God created, and that which was created replicates itself exactly the same after its kind. It's a key point. It's not a question of change. So we're going to look at this particular insect. I've seen Gabrielle in here, who's quite an expert on things like this. So contain yourself, Gabrielle. I know you're not one for being too extrovert anyway, but if you know the answer to this, just hold it within yourself for a little bit, because I'm going to talk about this one. And you're familiar with that, aren't you? I'm not trying to embarrass her now. And it's one of these Latin names I think I might have a stab at, you know what I mean? I usually try to avoid talking, giving any sort of pronouncement on these things. But this is a macro glossum, Stellatarum. I think that's right. Would you go along with that? A macro glossum, Stellatarum. Richard, you've got a better way of saying it.
Big star, Jeff.
Big star.
Macro is big and stellar is starring there.
Yeah, I can see the macro, certainly. That's what we're going to talk about. And it's this, which doesn't look particularly exciting. We look at that picture, I guess. I wonder how many I've seen and failed to recognise, such as the camouflage of it and the drab appearance. Nevertheless, when it opens up a little bit, it's a bit more colourful. The markings are a little bit more interesting. So we're going to talk about this particular insect in a few moments. But before then, we're going to read Job chapter 38, where Job was put very much on the spot. God has asked him a good number of questions about the physical earth and that which is inanimate. And then as we come into this section, God switches from that which is inanimate to that which has life. And he just gives a handful of examples before Job and just asks him some searching questions about these few creatures. So I'm going to ask Paul, please, if you could read that section of Job for us.
So we're Job 38 and verse 36. Who hath put wisdom in the inward parts? Who hath given understanding to the heart? Who can number the clouds in wisdom? Or who can stay the bottles of heaven? When the dust groweth into hardness and the clods cleave fast together, wilt thou hunt the prey for the lion, or fill the appetite of the young lions? When they couch in their dens and abide in the covert of the light in wait, who provideth for the raven his food, when his young ones cry unto God, they wander for lack of meat. Knowest thou that the time when the wild goats of the rock bring forth, or canst thou mark when the hinds do calve? Canst thou number the months that they fulfil, or knowest thou the time when they bring forth? They bow themselves, they bring forth their young ones, they cast out their sorrows. Their young ones are in good liking, they grow up with corn, they go forth and return not unto them. Who hath sent out the wild ass free, or who hath loosed the bands of the wild ass? Whose house have I made the wilderness, and the barren land his dwellings? He scorneth the multitude of the city, neither regardeth he the crying of the diver. The range of the mountains is his pasture, and he searcheth after every green thing. Will the unicorn be willing to serve thee, or abide by thy crib? Canst thou bind the unicorn with his band in the furrow, or with a harrow the valleys after thee? Wilt thou trust him, because his strength is great, or wilt thou leave thy labour to him? Wilt thou believe him that he will bring home thy seed and gather it into thy barn? Gavest thou the goodly wings unto the peacock, or wings and feathers unto the ostrich, which leaveth her eggs in the earth, and warmeth them in dust, and forgetteth that the foot may crush them, or that the wild beast may break them? She is hardened against her young ones, as though they were not hers. Her labour is in vain without fear. Because God hath deprived her of wisdom, neither hath he imparted to her understanding. What time she lifteth up herself on high, she scorneth the horse and his rider. Hast thou given the horse strength? Hast thou clothed his neck with thunder? Canst thou make him afraid as a grasshopper? The glory of his nostrils is terrible. He poureth in the valley and rejoiceth in his strength. He goeth on to meet the armed men. He mocketh at fear and is not affrighted, neither turneth his back from the sword. The quiver rattleth against him, the glittering spear and the shield. He swalloweth the ground with fierceness and rage, neither believeth he that it is the sound of the trumpet. He saith among the trumpet, ha ha, and he smelleth the battle afar off, the thunder of the captains and the shouting. Doth the hawk fly by the wisdom, and stretch her wings toward the south? Doth the eagle mount up at the command, and make her nest on high? She dwelleth and abideth on the rock, upon the crag of the rock, and the strong place. From thence she seeketh the prey, and her eyes behold afar off. Her young ones also suck up blood, and where the slain are, there is she.
Thank you, Paul. Job, as I say, really put on the spot there. But those creatures that God presents to him, he would have knowledge of. He would know about the peacock. He would know about the horse. He would know about the mountain goat. You know about the ostrich. All those creatures are there, are in his experience. And so he'd have seen them, he'd had some knowledge of them, he may have observed them to some extent, but God now saying, oh, you really think about them. Really, really think about how they were, not just what they look like, but their behaviour even. Not just the physicality of them, but their very behaviours. Have you worked that out? Now, some of those questions, not driven by scripture, sadly, but some of those questions, to some extent, have been answered by clever men. But there's so much that even the brightest and the most intelligent in the earth haven't got a proverbial clue about. truth is, it's one of those cases of where men find out a little bit, it just opens up a whole vista of that which is yet to be found out. So, you know, we can fill with Job, and all I'm saying to you is, let's look around at the things that we experience, ask a few questions, and perhaps, like Job, just simply at the end, just give God the praise and realise he's much greater than ourselves, that God knows what he's doing. And so we call upon his mercy, that he looks after us as he looks after all his creation. So that's why we read Job 38, and we're now going to look at, just to remind you, Macroglossum stellatarum. And there it is, there's our moth. And I showed you lastly that it opened up, it's got some interesting wing patterns and so on. And it's a day flying moth, it's quite a big moth, about 2 inches. So it's something that is near you, you've got a good chance of observing. And I hope you can now see that in flight. It's actually, I think, a beautiful moth. Lovely orangey, sort of tanny, yellowy even, hind wings come to the fore, they're beautiful. And the thing about them is their wings beat so rapidly that they produce an audible hum. And can only be seen, those wings, as in a haze. So you look at that photograph, it's not exactly crisp out where the wings are, because they're just moving too fast. Just moving too fast. And they have a darting movement as they go from one flower to the next. And they've got this lovely long tongue, really long. We'll talk about that in a moment. Really long tongue. So if you're not careful, you could easily fall into the trap. And this is a hummingbird. So when you're like me and you see one on the Cardigan coast, you just know it can't be a hummingbird. Trinidad, maybe, but not on the Cardigan coast, just that little, outside a little place of Munt. And for once, we were walking, Helen and I, and Helen didn't spot the thing, it was me. Usually, Helen always spots stuff quicker than me, got a much sharper eye than I. But on this occasion, I was a little bit ahead, and I spotted it. And thought I'd find out more about it. And it certainly does give an illusion of a hummingbird. And so let's put the Latin to one side. And it's commonly called the hummingbird hawk moth. And Gabriel, you knew that all along, didn't you, Gans?
Yeah.
And your photographs, you've got some photographs of this one. Oh, there's some good ones here, so there's a challenge for you. So we're going to talk about the hummingbird hawk moth, which I tell you, 2 years ago, I knew nothing about. It was just that wonderful walk, beautiful May day. Saw that moth. Wow, what's that? And it's got quite an interesting range of where it lives. The green is where it's generally resident. Blue, where you might find it in the winter. Yellow, the blue in the summer, it goes up north. And in the winter, you know, we'll drop down into Africa, into India and so on. I've got to say, I'm a little bit at odds with that map. I mean, who am I to say that? But there won't be too many hummingbird hawk moths in southern England over winter. If there are any there, then this January we've had, they've probably been killed off. So by that, I'm indicating to you now that this bird migrates to us. This moth migrates to us. So what I saw in May 2015 had flown from southern France on the Cardigan coast, West Wales. And that was the first thing that made me go, wow, when I found that out. Wow. And there have been large influxes of them in the year 2000, 2006, 2011. And you may have seen some then, and in fact, I'll pause it. Has anyone seen one? There may be a good number of you know what I'm talking about and seen them. Wonderful.
That's in our garden.
Brilliant. I'm going to come to that actually, Martin, but that's lovely. That really is good. Because there's the range of habitation. And They obviously breed in the UK, but they're not able to survive in winter. In mild winters, small numbers may overwinter. So on that map, that's probably why they got shaded green as being resident. There's a few that might survive, but really the continuing presence of the moth in the UK is due to that migration. We see them in summer and then they seem to disappear. And once we get come from France. Some evidence that they actually make the route back. The ones that arrive in Britain won't be the ones that go back. They'll die out during the summer, but the next generation, a few of them will be able to return. Now, we don't believe in omens or anything like this, do we? But I just thought it was interesting just to pass a little bit of anecdote as we go on a light. During the D-Day landings, there was a swarm of them coming the other way. And even before then, it was always reckoned to be a good sign. See a good few hummingbird hawk moths. It's always reckoned to bring good luck. Well, I'm not too sure really about D-Day. If you were on one of those ships and you're going to be landed on the beach, seeing a moth at that time, I don't think it made much difference to one way or another. I'm sure you've got butterflies in your stomach for sure. But there you go, as I say, it's a beautiful moth, lovely. And I'm sorry, Martin, if I know the details, I would have had your map up on here, but I've got this map. Hope most of you can pick something up on here. Sorry, let's press the right buttons. On the 19th of June last, there was one found in Park Road, which is near the railway station. See the Coventry railway station on there? Park Road's not too far away. I'm very familiar with Park Road, because in Park Road is the doctor's surgery for my mum and dad. I'm there nearly every week. So when I saw this, I just had to smile. There's a website where people record, if they're really interested in wildlife, they record these sightings. So I looked up for 2016. For Coventry, it was this one. Now, there were probably lots of sightings, but nobody's bothered to record. I'm not pointing the finger at you, Martin, or anything. But anyway, and I'm really disappointed the honeys are not here, because, as well as Martin's garden, it could have been in David and Sue's garden. It's not that far away. So you can see this, potentially, you can see this moth in your garden. It could be right there in the summer.
Jeff, I think that's probably Bernard's gardens, yeah.
I've got it pointed to Orchard Crescent. I wasn't too quite sure where around on the bend it is, so.
Well, his garden going all the way back up Orchard Crescent, so massive.
I would say that if there was one scene in Park Road, the chances are Bernard's had them in his garden, and David has, and they haven't noticed. Or perhaps I'm doing them a disservice. Now let's just think about this moth now. It's interesting because it'll do at least two broods of eggs. When you think of moths and caterpillars, you just think of one cycle, finish. No, they can actually go around four times, which is impressive. And they'll lay an egg on a separate plant, more than one egg, but there'll be an egg on an individual plant. And we're just talking about 0.4 of an inch, just a millimetre, tiny little thing. Can you see it there? That little green egg. And after 8-10 days, caterpillar emerges. And quite a nice marked caterpillar. I've never seen one. Has anyone seen one of those? Again, the camouflage is quite impressive, isn't it? And it will go through, typical of all caterpillars, it seems to me, they nearly all do this. It'll go through four changes. It'll grow, change its skin, new skin, get bigger, change again. Four suits, keep changing the suit. And after the fourth star, as it's called, then it'll go into chrysalis form. But it goes through that four times, and that to me is a wonder. But after about 3 weeks, it'll be quite a big caterpillar. And then it will suddenly start to change into a chrysalis, and we're talking about 3 weeks, and then You get that? Now, to me, it just talks of creation. It doesn't talk of evolution. Evolution wants millions of years. Not millions of years. How many days we got there? I don't know, 50 days. You go from a little egg like that, it goes to the caterpillar, which is a life form quite different from that of a flying insect. They're absolutely different, but there you are. All that within 50 days. And, you know, when it's in that chrysalis, when it goes in that chrysalis form, we've got that outer casing of the chrysalis, but inside, it just goes down to mush. It's just liquid. Just breaks down completely into liquid and gets all built up again. It's the moth. To me, it's miraculous. It's of God. It's not happy circumstance. You know, how many throws of the dice do we need? It's just incredible, really. And we're just talking about a book that most people, let's be honest, most people in the British Isles haven't got a clue about. But it's there. And we take an interest, we can wonder it, and if we're honest and true, we can be humbled, like Job, and put in a position of awe. Now, I'll put there 7 months. Don't know. Some might live a couple of years. Even the experts are not sure. All depends what time of the year it is. You know, if it survives through the winter in this country, might go another season. Just don't know. 7 months is what most people guess at. And so, you know, as these faithful ones of the past have said, thou, even thou art Lord alone. Thou hast made heaven, the heaven of heavens, with all their host, the earth and all things that are therein, the seas and all that is therein, and thou preservest them all, and the host of heaven worship thee. Now that caterpillar lives and feeds typically on those plants. But the butterfly typically feeds off those plants. And so the wonder of creation is this interaction, creature with creatures, but also moths with various plants. And there has to be that interaction, particularly that second group there, because we're on about, you know, we're thinking now pollination. As that insect moves from one plant to another, as that moth in its moth form goes from one plant to another, it's pollinating those flowers. Those flowers need moths like that. I'm not too sure ladies' bedstraw particularly wants the caterpillars eating them to non-existence. But certainly that second group of flowers needs the likes of a hummingbird, hawk moth. So it's, you know, there's that going on, there's that wonderful interaction there, interplay, and you can't have one without the other, really. Certainly if those plants weren't there, there would be no hawk moth. You need those plants. And there's a good picture of that probing tongue, which it skillfully uses. And I hope, Martin, you agree, when you saw it, did you think it was quite an unusual thing? What's that, yeah? And I hope you got that idea of it, a hummingbird, but on.
Yeah, we've seen it. We didn't worry what it was, because he was looking at it.
Yeah.
Buzzing in and out, and then came in.
Yeah.
To the plant.
Yeah. You know, I've been privileged to see hummingbirds, I expect most of us have, you know, if we've been to the States and Caribbean. Hummingbirds are only in the New World, funny enough. But if you've been there and you've seen them, then you know that's incredible. And it's just like that. Now, it generates lift by moving its wings in a shallow figure eight pattern. Well, that's really easy to explain, isn't it? Show you how easy it is to explain. Just by that. That's how easy it is to explain. Do you want me to put the words to it? I didn't bother reading the text or the one's summary passage. You know, the way those wings work It's mind-boggling. Well, here's a you know, what's going on in a nutshell. I think this is understandable. This motion creates a spinning vortex of air on the upper surface of the wing, which generates a well of low pressure. The higher pressure zone below the wing essentially pushes the moth upward, keeping it airborne. I can just about get my head around that. The rest, leave for the aeronautical engineers and experts.
Jeff, can I ask a question? Could you express it mathematically?
Oh, well, there is mathematics. Yeah, there's graphs and charts and all the rest of it on that. But again, Richard, I'm not going there. It's just too complicated for me. But I mean, just look at those diagrams. Someone's meticulously drawn them out. How wonderful that is that someone's done that. Observe, take note to that precision. That's what that moth is doing. Now they can fly on the straight, on the lateral as it were, as fast as 12 mile an hour. I have a job getting into a trot at 12 mile an hour these days. You know, 12 mile an hour is quite a fair pace to be moving at. They can go quite fast. But this is the wonder of it. Hummingbirds can hover by generating around 50 wing beats per second. Now, you know, we're talking very simply here because one hummingbird might have a more rapid wing beat than another hummingbird, but in general, round figure, 50 wing beats per second. Similarly with bats, they vary between type to type, but typically a bat, a figure of 17 beats per second will suffice. Hummingbird hawk moth tops them all with at least 85 beats a second. So all that diagram, all those wings going like that, it's going 85 times a second. That's why the photography is difficult. That's why we look at it, whoa, what's that? It's staggering. And I don't think this has come by chance, such as evolutionists would suggest. This is God at work. This is something created. I'm sorry, a lot of pictures very similar, but there you go. And again, the photographer, I guess would argue that you can see the wings moving fast, can't you, because it's blurred. Now, they prefer to feed in the bright daylight, which is unusual for moths, as I'm sure you realise. I don't know if you noticed in the earlier pictures of the moth, they've got big eyes. Of the hummingbird hawk moth, they've got big eyes, and there it is, closed up. And the centre of the eyes, packed with more photoreceptor cells than the edges, so you've got that dark bit in the middle, very impressive eye on it. And so it's got this ability to pick out the detail. You know, this probably helps the moth to judge its distance from flowers, which are prone to bob and sway in the wind when the moth is feeding. So it's controlling that tongue. The plant is moving. You know, it's not easy, but it's got these wonderful eyes, sophisticated eyes. You know, well, I used to be told at school about simple cells and so on. They talk about simple eye, and the compound eye was neither real. Rubbish. All eyes are incredibly intricate. Wonderful, precise things. And God has created this special eye for this particular creature. But there's its tongue. O Lord, how manifold are thy works. In wisdom hast thou made them all. The earth is full of thy riches. I may not understand why God to choose to create a creature like that. It's not of necessity overall. I mean, there are other moths. You know, why does God? I don't know. I can't answer that. When I see that, I can see design, forethought, wisdom, precision. I can see it all. Oh, Lord, how manifold are thy works? And that tongue, you can't have it out long, stretched out all the time. It's a nuisance. You spiral it up. And there's maths in that, Richard, in the spiral. Just the spiral of the tongue alone. And it controls it. And it does it with the blood flow in its head, believe it or not. it's controlled, but get too technical, it's difficult. And they don't feed aimlessly. They don't feed aimlessly. On stems with multiple flowers close together, they keep track of each flower they visit. So they don't waste time and energy by repeat sampling over the same empty flower. So, you know, we might think it's all at random, but it's not. It does that particular one, then it moved to this one, then it moved to that. It won't double back. Not going to make that mistake. I've dealt with that one. How's it know that? How's it know it? You know, sometimes I go upstairs. By the time I go upstairs, I've forgotten what I've come upstairs for. One or two are laughing. I'm hoping you have a similar problem.
Exactly, Jeff. Yeah.
It can also work when I go downstairs as well. My memory is not always that good. But this moth, just a moth, it knows which ones it's been to and it's not going to waste time. And we're coming to the end of this talk, you perhaps will be pleased to know. They have been seen to trap line. You might have heard that expression, to trap line. And that means they return to the same plants at the same time each day. Oh, I don't know if you observed that, Martin.
A couple of days.
Yeah. But they'll come back.
Yeah.
So it's not just short-term memory. It will span over 24 hours, 48 hours, whatever. They'll come back. And that's called trap lining. And they can do that. So, I didn't see one last year. I was really disappointed. Just didn't see one. You know, we come to the end of the January, cold. We get to May, and it's warm, and we're in our gardens, or we're just walking around. Let's keep our eyes open. Maybe we'll see one of these things, and hopefully you'll marvel at it. I certainly have got a lot of pleasure from it, and it just strengthens my faith yet again in the fact that God created creation, not evolution.